this isn't my job. I said, well, what is it? He goes, this is my career. And I, that was the moment where I was like, holy shit, this is what we want to do. We want people to not think of this as a job. We want people to think of this as a career.
Welcome to Re-Energize.
This is a podcast about renewable energy.
Yeah, we know what you're thinking. Another duo of clean tech bros wonking out on energy policy.
Think again. This is about your energy.
How do you find peace on the emotional roller coaster of renewable development? How has this work transformed you?
We ask these questions together with people who have lived it.
Plug in.
It's time to re-energize. Micah, it's really good to see you. It's been a while.
It's good to see you, Jay. Yes, it has.
Thanks
been
for joining
long.
Us. It has been too long. Thanks for joining us. We've had a lot of exciting things happening in Philadelphia. I think we had originally scheduled this for the day of the Eagles Super Bowl parade. And
what a day.
What a day. Did you go to the parade?
Oh, come on, man. Is the Pope Catholic? I mean, you know, I'm a Philadelphian, man. Born in West Philadelphia. Eagles win the Super Bowl. That's a national holiday as far as I'm concerned.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I want to take a moment and just introduce you to our audience. I've got some bullet points here. So Micah Goldmarkel is founder and CEO of Solar States. Solar States is one of the top solar installation companies in Eastern PA. From my perspective, the top. They've done my roof. I've got 12 kilowatts on the roof here installed by Solar States. It's been running flawlessly for close to 4 years now. You've done over 800 projects. Solar States was founded in 2008. And, you know, you're more than just a solar installer, right? A certified B Corp with a really big focus on training and education. So you've got the Bright Solar Futures Program, the City of Philadelphia funded Find Your Ladder Program, opening doors for urban youth to be part of the sustainability movement, which is, you know, really exciting, really important work. And so it's beyond just putting green energy out there into the grid. You're actually training and educating, and you are making solar power really an essential component of the green economy in Philadelphia. So we're really happy to have you and looking forward to hearing from you about one of your experiences working in this industry, which you've been in for a very long time.
Oh, man. Don't remind me, Jay.
So, Mike, I'll just jump in here and make a quick comment, too, about the first time that you and I met. I don't know if you remember this or not. This was about 14 years ago at, I believe it was a Penn Futures conference in central Pennsylvania. I was about maybe 2 or 3 months into my first job in renewable energy at Community Energy. And I was just, you know, a young pup, you know, coming up, didn't know, you know, getting my feet wet in the industry. And I remember we were at a cocktail hour and I just remember you were very kind and you asked me a question. You realized I was at Community Energy. You were very complimentary. Oh, Community Energy and the rec business. And you asked me a question. I think it was about the rec market in Pennsylvania. And I felt like I, being at Community Energy, should know the answer. So I started to answer it and then quickly realized I didn't have a good answer. And I think I just admitted that in the moment. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget that what I walked away with was feeling like, oh, Micah didn't, he just made me feel totally at ease and comfortable in that moment. And I immediately knew you were somebody that could be trusted and like just kind of had my respect. And even though it was a while ago, that just always stuck with me.
Right, right. It reminds me of an old joke, right? There's two types of people in this world. There are those who think there are two types of people in this world and those who don't, right? But in my mind, there's two types of people, like those who you talk to and they don't know the answer to a question and they try to bullshit their way through it, right? Or those who are willing to be brave enough to say, you know what, I don't know the answer to that and let's keep it moving and we'll find that one out. And I've always had a soft spot in my heart for people who can just come out and say, you know what, I don't know. And I think that's a powerful thing, and I appreciate it. So, you know, I'm glad that moment stuck with you, Joel, because that definitely means a lot to me when people come to me and say, I could tell you a bunch of stuff, but, you know, the answer is really, I don't know. So it's a hard thing to do in life, turns out, you know?
Yeah. Well, if you need somebody who doesn't know things, Micah, just I'm your guy. Jay has some good answers. you know, like, I know a few more things now than 14 years ago, but yeah.
There's a time and place for bullshit, but it can be a big waste of time.
It can be a huge waste of time. And like, especially when you know somebody's BSing you, you know, I can't tell you how many times, I don't know if it's like particular to the solar industry, but I feel like it might be where people are just like selling you a whole bunch of stuff on a particular product or a project or how they did. And you're just standing there and you're like, I know this is bullshit, man. Come on. Like, we're both in the same industry. You know?
And then sometimes you got to wonder, like, do they know? Or like, do they believe it? You know, like,
right. Yeah, are they buying their own bullshit? Right. Right. I'm as guilty as some others in that fashion, but you know, one of the areas where I try to shoot it as straight as humanly possible is in our training programs, you know, and like, we constantly get asked, you know, what's your data? Are you, you know, do you guys have some data for your success rates? Like, we've heard a lot about your programs now. You know, we've been doing them for 10 plus years. So it's a frequent thing for a funder or somebody else to come up and say, what's the data? And, you know, I tell them straight up, I say, we have some data, you know, we fail 8 times out of 10. And like, that's the hard truth of working in an industry where like, you're trying to change the trajectory of folks who have been, you know, impoverished for generations. And I remember I had to come to that realization actually through a friend of mine who went to the same high school I did. His name was Ozzy. And I was sitting there and I had just had one of our trainees had been rearrested and I had spent all this time, he had been working at our company. I was just feeling depressed and I was like, Ozzy, man, like, I don't know if I can keep doing this. You know, I put all this time into this dude and like, he was doing so great. And then like one mistake, he's rearrested, he's back in jail and it's going to be a while before I see him again. It's emotionally hard. And it's, I feel like I failed him. I failed this. I failed that. And he goes, you know, Micah, who the fuck do you think you are, man? You're going to change generational poverty and with the swipe of a wand? Like, what? You know, like, it put me back. I was like, oh, man, I got to hold on, step back for a second. He's like, listen, man, if you reach like 1 in 10, you've made a huge difference. Like, you've really done it. And you've got to ask yourself, are you putting in the effort with every person? And are you providing the wraparound services? But like, you know, You're not a miracle worker. You're here to try to help people, but it's got to be a two-way street and it's got to be something where you're willing to fail more than succeed and just really relish your successes. And I was like, man, I wish you weren't so right all the time.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I was just going to say, it's funny when you said 8 out of 10 fail, immediately my mind went to, so you succeed 2 out of 10 times.
Right, right.
Classic
right,
developer.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and these days, you know, when you think about baseball and the Phillies, like, you could be in the starting lineup if you're hitting 200. You know, you got to push them out of the park, which you do. Which you do. Yeah. So, you know, but
you got to put some out of the park. That's right. Schwarber was around that line. I'm like, all right, right, okay. You know, he could get some walks. And I mean, it also depends on what you mean by success and failure, right? Because those are fungible things, right? They can be toyed around with. And this is where I get really annoyed at the sort of job training industry is like, a lot of people are like, well, we have 100% success rate in our trainings. And like, that looks really good to funders. If I were a funder, I'd be like, I'm not funding that program. They're cooking the books. Like, this isn't right. Mm-hmm. Like, we do 100% job placement with our graduates, you know, or something close to it. Like, we get people jobs, but I don't look at that as success. Mm-hmm. I want to see people in jobs for years afterward, and not just the entry level job they started at, but climbing the ladder to success, getting to parts. Because, you know, if 2 years in, somebody's still at the entry level, well, I mean, yeah, that's a win. They stuck with a job for 2 years. So there's levels of success. But the likelihood that they're going to stay there for 5 years decreases, you know, astronomically versus somebody who's 2 years in and has moved into another role and is moving up. It's like, okay, that person is in it to win it, and they're there to get stuff done.
And so you have a really high bar when you think about success. You have a really high bar, which is impressive. So to know that you succeed in that, hitting that bar 2 out of 10 times, and that you're, you know, placing people in real jobs, it's amazing. And we're so glad to have you here in Philly working with us. Micah, we asked you to come with a story, you know, an experience out of your, you know, long and illustrious career in the solar industry, something that impacted you. And just want to know if you could give us just a brief summary, a couple sentences, kind of tee it up before we get it, dive deeper.
Sure. You know, we work with a lot of folks who have been previously incarcerated. And, you know, there was a guy who came through our program with PowerCore PHL. And he actually taught me something about what we were trying to accomplish with Solar States, rather than me thinking I was teaching him something in this scenario. And so that's going to be a little bit of what I talk about and share the story of my good friend and one of our trainees, Cottrell.
And Mike, I'd love to hear, before we jump straight into the story, like, how did you get into residential solar in the first place?
That's a funny question, because I actually never envisioned myself in that space when I came into the industry. You know, I came into the industry in 2008, easily the best year of my life as a Philadelphian. You know, I saw the Phillies won the World Series. I mean, gotta love that. Mm-hmm. And Obama was elected that year, which was a pretty seminal moment in my life. The markets crashed. Everything went downhill. I started a new business, Solar States, and I had my first kid. So 2008 was hands down a crazy year for me. But when I started Solar States, I knew right out of the bat I wanted to do education around solar, which was actually kind of crazy because I knew nothing about solar at the time. I mean, quite literally nothing. I just heard a talk by this guy by the name of Van Jones. And he had written this book, and really, he basically motivated me to say, I got to do solar and I got to do training. But when I did a little financial analysis of solar, I was like, how does anybody make this pencil? I don't get it. And so I started with the teaching part. And again, that was a weird way to go. And figured I would just sort of finance solar arrays is my long way around to getting to answer your question. I figured I would just be doing commercial stuff. And after I financed the first solar array at the Crane Arts Building, it was a power purchase agreement here in Philadelphia, one of the largest solar arrays actually at the time that was installed in the Center City area. And, you know, I realized through that process how much I didn't know. There was like so many gaps in my knowledge when I was talking to the installer, even working. I was friends with the folks who were installing, so they allowed me to sort of participate in that process. And I was like, oh, man. There's so much I don't know. And like, how am I going to finance this and trust people and understand this stuff and not know it? And so that really motivated me into thinking, my goodness, you know, I should get hands-on. And that's where I got into residential solar, because I had to start at the bottom and put my first microinverter on a rail on a roof and, you know, see how that actually worked and wire them together. You know, I can see Jay smiling now, like, oh man, yeah, I know. Yeah, those were the days, right? So that's how I got in.
And in 2008 in Pennsylvania, there were not many people who knew anything about solar. So let's be honest about that.
Let's be clear.
There were not many people who had any clue.
Yeah.
So that's awesome.
Yeah, just imagine, like, when you're talking about it, Micah, and you're talking about, like, installing the microinverter, the, you know, the array, and, like, turning it on, and I'm imagining you wondering, like, is it going to work? You know, and I'm thinking like Doc Brown in Back to the Future, like plugging it in. You know, it's like
1.1
what,
gigawatts.
Yeah. That's right. Like, it worked. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and it wasn't like all at once. To be honest with you, the first systems I did were just literally mounting microinverters to the rail and plugging solar panels into the microinverters. I didn't know what happened after that for years because I had an electrician I was working with and he handled everything. He was like, look, just make sure some of this trunk cable is hanging off the array and I'll come and take care of the rest. And I was like, all right. And so it was a real mystery. Like, I literally thought what they were doing was magic for a while.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The system, you know, of course I'd be there when we turned it on, everything would work. And I'd be like, how did that happen? I was constantly asking the electrician, like, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, I'll show you some other time. I'll show you, you know? So like, I probably went through, I don't know, 4 or 5 roofs before I actually learned the whole way through what it was to do residential solar. We started off as me and a couple of youth build students on the roof. We are now 60 full-time people at Solar wow. States. And that's something that is shocking to say, but it's also something that I take great pride in.
Yeah, that's amazing.
As you should.
Yeah, as you should.
So why don't we dive in? And you told us a little bit of a summary of kind of, you know, preview of the story you're going to get into, but before diving into the specific details, could you give us a sense, like, you know, what year was it, you know, where were you, you know, at that time, and just give us a little bit of context as to what was going on in the world of Mica at the time this story was happening.
Sure. So again, this story is about a friend and installer. His name is Cottrell, still with us. He's been with us for over 10 years. He's now a lead. And, you know, at that time, I had had a program with a great charter school called Youth Build. Youth Build does wonderful work. They train folks who want to come back, get their GED, haven't graduated from high school, and then they also give them a skill. And they had a green building track, and they wanted to have solar included on that. And so I taught the solar part of that. And then I hired the students. Frankly, the first employees of Solar States were Youth Build students who would help me go out onto the roof and install solar. And had a real struggle with that because I didn't have any infrastructure around me. It was just me and like 2 or 3 students, you know, out on the roof. And, you know, it turns out that folks, even though they come back and they want to get into these fields, they're still pretty young. They still have, you know, the normal issues that any 18 to 20 year old would have with trying to be consistent, showing up for a job at 6:30 a.m. in the morning. So wanted to figure out a little better way to do things, maybe get some folks who were a little bit older. And PowerCore PHL, which takes people who were previously incarcerated and trains them up on how to do green stormwater infrastructure, was also interested in having a solar training program. And so we started working with them. And in the first cohort was Trell. And I talked with him, and Trell had been released, you know, had done his time, had done the crime, had admitted it. I mean, this guy was in incredible physical shape. And, you know, for those of you who have crawled around on roofs, it doesn't hurt to be in great shape to be able to install solar on really pitchy roofs. So I thought, you know, this could be something maybe he likes. And he had literally never heard of solar power before. I remember him and there was another phenomenal person in that cohort, this guy by the name of Thomas. And, you know, it's always fun to sort of run down the logic because you can really simply explain solar. And I think this is a big gap in the way that we teach. Like, we don't look for simple explanations for complex things, right? One way you could talk about a solar panel is to talk about PN junctions and light hitting and, you know, knocking loose electrons. And like, that's all true, but it's not the way to sort of simply do it. To simply explain solar energy, say, like, how does a plant grow? It needs light. And you know that in order to grow, you need energy. And so light, therefore, must be energy because the plant gets caloric value. It gets energy to grow from the light. That's how we discovered all of this. And if you keep it at that level, people start thinking, oh my gosh, that's right. Okay, where else can I draw these connections? And so I saw that light go on for Trell and Thomas. And For the next 2 years, Trell was just working his butt off. I mean, he really was getting after it, doing a great job. And there are folks who work their butt off and try hard, but just don't grasp the concepts and they have trouble and you need to, you know, go back and keep going. And sometimes it sinks in, sometimes it doesn't. And then there are other folks who are reaching out, saying, I get this. Now what's the next? What's the next? What's the next? And Trell was one of those folks. Like, how do I get to the next skill? The other way we can tell when somebody's going to be a success is when they start buying their own tools, like right out. They show up. You're like, oh, that's a nice pair of Klein strippers, man. Okay, I see you over there, you know. And Trell is like starting to buy his own tools and do all this stuff. And then about 2 years in, I'm doing his employee review and I'm sitting there and I'm saying to Trell, I'm like, wow, you know, Trell, thanks so much for being a valuable member of the team. You know, what do you think about your job? And Trell likes to joke around, as do I. And he sort of sits there quietly. And I said, Trell, what do you think about your job? He said, what do you mean? What do you mean? What job? And, you know, I'm like, all right, Trell, enough with the jokes. What do you think about your job? He goes, I don't know what you're talking about, man. And I said, your job? He goes, no. He said, this isn't my job. I said, well, what is it? He goes, this is my career. And that was the moment where I was like, holy shit, this is what we want to do. We want people to not think of this as a job. We want people to think of this as a career. We want them to go for longevity and not just entry level. And he just summarized it in 2 seconds and knocked it out the park. And from then on, I realized the goal is not to give people jobs, but to find folks' careers.
That's an awesome story. So that's the story.
That's the story.
All right, cool. We're going to dive deeper. Before we go there, do you remember what was going on in your personal life at this time? Like, how far into Solar States is this? You know, just to give us a little context.
So I started Solar States in 08. It took a couple of years to really get it off the ground. In 2010, we did our first real installation. So this was probably 2013, something, 2012, 2013. What was going on in my life, man? I was struggling in every facet, like wasn't making any money. I was sort of working two jobs because Solar States wasn't even making enough to support me. So I had a little software side hustle that I had been doing amongst other side hustles, moving gigs, all that stuff. I had my kid, as I mentioned, in 2008. And so that obviously changed the dynamics of my life. And I was struggling with that, struggling with the relationship with my wife in terms of like how to deal with having a kid now in our relationship and also, you know, various other things. So it felt like I was just fighting 30 fights at once at that point in time and unsure of whether I was winning any of them and what the heck was going
to
happen.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that. I think, you know, everybody can relate to that. And that's part of what we're trying to just dig into a little bit in this podcast is, you know, we're not just people who work in the solar industry. We're not just developers or installers or, you know, we're people who have lives and the two really come together. And that's important to recognize and acknowledge. So thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, it was a difficult time. Although I have to say, if I could add one thing, I think actually the city of Philadelphia is also responsible for, you know, whatever level of success we've achieved at this point in time. Mm-hmm. And I say that because I didn't go to college, so I didn't have any debt. And Philadelphia allows you to live or allowed you to live very, very inexpensively. I lived with other people for pretty much all of the years. I moved out when I was 17 and I lived with friends the entire time. And I don't think my rent was ever higher than like $200 a month, you know, for a long time. And it allowed me to also relatively inexpensively purchase a house, which I bought with a friend because I didn't have enough money. And that's where I ended up starting my family. And, you know, for the first, I would say, 6, 7 years of solar states, I don't know that I made more than $30,000 a year max. Mm-hmm. And yet I could survive off of that and have a family going. Now, shout out to my wife. She provided a lot of support financially too. Mm-hmm. Professor Temple worked in the private sector very early on, so she was making some decent money. Mm-hmm. But she wasn't sharing any of that money with me. No, I'm just kidding.
That was going all to the children.
It's good. She said, "Boy, you better make some more money if you want money. The kids, they'll be all right."
You know, Michael, listening to you talk about the journey with Trout and knowing the outcome of that very positive one, but then also hearing you describe the challenges of growing solar states, I'm wondering if there's like a moment of specific challenge that you can think back to, especially if it relates to, like, you know, you're like, it's so much of what you're doing, it sounds like, is coaching, mentoring, right? Finding a way to connect with people, keep them motivated during a path that takes a lot of time, right? And commitment, you know, before, you know, it really bears fruit. And I'm curious, is like thinking about you as a coach and a mentor, is there a time that you can think of where it was like, yeah, it was challenging, where maybe that outcome with Trell wasn't so clear, or someone like him wasn't so clear? And I'm just curious if that's something you can think on. I realize I'm putting you on the spot here.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, man, the number of times it wasn't clear is we'd have to have a month long podcast here. I mean, like none of it was clear ever. And it still isn't clear. Like, I'm not out of the woods yet. My goodness. So, but you know, I can tell you, man, there were some really, really heartbreaking times. You know, that I mentioned that I started the company with Youth Build students. And, you know, we had a truck. We had a little warehouse that we worked out of. And sometimes I would ask them to get the truck and meet me somewhere because I was going to drive my car and go get some stuff from Depot and meet them at the site. And so we worked up a relationship of trust. And so then, you know, they had keys to the truck and all of that. And I remember one weekend I went to get the truck on the weekend and it wasn't there at the warehouse. And I'm like, it's not here. Was it stolen? I'm calling the police. It was stolen. And I call the police. And then, you know, I called the students. I was like, guys, I want you to know the truck has been stolen and I don't know about work on Monday. And I could kind of tell they were like, oh, no. Oh, really? It was stolen? Really? And I was like, yeah, man, it's not here. I don't know. You know, and I was like, oh, wait a second. Hold on. You know, and they weren't saying they had the truck, but it was like, it was one of those like, okay. Well, you know, and it's like, all right, do you have the truck? Is it you who had, you know, eventually I had to be like, all right. Did you take the truck? And they were like, yeah, we took it. Like, I was like, dude, you know, that's stealing, man. Like, it's not your truck and it's the weekend. You didn't tell me you wanted to borrow it. If you had called me and said, yo, can I borrow the truck? Like, I'd have been like, yeah, of course. But like, you didn't do that. Why? And, you know, we had a conversation about that and how it worked. And I ended up suspending them. And then for the incident, and, you know, they came back and I talked about it actually with the Youth Build folks a little while later. And they said, you know, Micah, you're not doing people favors by allowing them to do things that wouldn't be allowed to happen out in the normal world. Like, if they had stolen a truck at a construction company, they'd have been fired. And sometimes that's actually the best thing so that people get the message of what's expected. Doesn't mean, though, that if you have to let somebody go, that you can't say to them, listen, take some time, think about what it is, learn some skills, and come back, and maybe it'll work a second time. And that was a valuable lesson. Somebody, I can't remember who, I think it might have been my man Amin Akbar, actually, who told me that. We've actually had that happen now a couple of times where somebody did something we had to hold them accountable, because if not, like, you know, what it could be total mess at the company. But they ended up coming back after a while and learned the lesson and were better for it. And that was really pretty shocking to me that things could work that way.
Micah, I wanted to ask a follow-up question about the story that you mentioned with Trell. You know, it sounded like to you it was this kind of aha moment, right? Where he's saying, no, this is not my job. This is my career. And it changed the way that you thought about your company and your employees. Can you talk a little bit more about kind of how that change played out going forward? How did that change the way you did things?
Sure. I mean, one of the things that I think founders or people who are really involved in their business struggle with is the doer-manager ratio. I don't know how to describe that other than that, right? Like, I was out on the roof doing a lot of the time, and I was helping students come in, and they were learning from me on the roof. But that has a limit to how many students I can deal with at any single time. Like, I can only handle two or three students on the roof with me, and that's it. And so hearing that from Trell and being like, wait, this is a career, and like, this is what I want to do, it made me realize I want to expand what we're doing. It's this is the work that makes me feel good. This feels right. Like, now I fully get it. Like, I didn't even get my own mission at first. You know what I mean? Like, I'm there to like train people and all that. And I'm like, yeah, this is going to be great. And like, we're going to get them entry level jobs. But then it's kind of like, but then what? And I didn't have an answer for that. And I didn't even realize I didn't have an answer for that. And then Trell answered that. It was that, like, you're with people long term and you're making significant change throughout their working career. That's what I really wanted to do. And so then I had to restructure how I thought about it, because I realized people need support services and we needed to be able to provide those and, you know, go out, perhaps get grants, get whatever supports need to be in place to make sure that people are successful in their careers at SolarStates. And so I had to step back from the doer mind state and start thinking about how can I get the right people in place to expand this vision and to also provide the supports that are needed for our employees.
It's amazing. It's so profound. I mean, you're talking about a conversation that you had with one of your employees and how it really transformed the way you thought about your business and the way that you built your business. And in a lot of ways, you know, to follow along and benefit these employees that you're bringing up. So that's awesome.
To be honest with you, I don't know that I fully got it until this moment, until you dug deeper on it. It's like, that's what happened. That's why it happened.
Right. That's cool.
I'm struck listening to this, Micah, about it's interesting. I was going to make a, you know, comment or joke about, you know, the mentee becomes the mentor. But like, I actually think that's not even quite accurate. It's like, what's interesting to me listening to you describe it is that you and Trell, neither one of you could have made this happen without the other, right? It took two to tango, you know, took two people. And that's what it was about, right? You know, like, the work is meaningful because of the impact that you're having on other people. And it takes somebody, you know, else to do that. And I don't know, I just find that really interesting, right? We all have so much to learn and teach each other, right? And that it's just cool listening to you talk about it. I'm also wondering, like, I don't know if this is something you feel. I mean, it's an observation, but tell me, Micah, if this resonates or not, or if you view it differently. When you introduced kind of the story and the outcome, I'd be curious to hear you describe how that felt. And then when you talked about the story of the challenge of the truck, you know, being stolen, like how that felt, And it seems like as you're talking here, like so many of the choices you're making, like when you talk about going from job to career, it's about like going from maybe transactional to like deep relationship oriented, going from short term to long term. And it seems like so much of what you're doing requires you going from doer to more increasing the manager ratio. It's like these long term, it's like increasingly like taking a long term view because these seeds you're planting bear fruit. You have a lot more truck experiences before you have to have a lot of those precede the career, you know, conversation. And I'm curious if you can like talk about those, the challenge, you know, the moment of the truck and the moment of the career, you know, and how you kind of, I don't know, appreciate both of those as part of the same journey, I guess, and how you reconcile that both of those happen to you on a daily or weekly or monthly basis. And yeah, I'll stop there.
Sure. So like, I like to sort of jokingly flip a entrepreneurial saying on its head a little bit, but I actually think it's also true. You know, in the software realm, people say like, fail quickly and move to the next thing, right? That's like the been this thing, like fail quickly, move to the next thing. So you find the thing that works. And I've always told people I'm the exact opposite. Like I fail really slowly and like keep failing again and again. And then like, but you, if you don't learn from each time you bang your toe, like, okay, I banged my toe on the front porch. Gonna miss that one. Now I banged it on the step. Okay. Miss that one. Now, you know, and I keep banging my toe until I find all of the places where I banged my toe. And hopefully I stop banging my toe after that point. But that's sort of like the path. And it's perhaps, a little callous too, you know, these are human beings we're dealing with and like, why should they have to suffer my learning curve? But it's like you said, it's definitely a two-way street. You know, I want to be very careful in these stories too, that to say that I saved no one and no one saved me. We worked together, yeah. You know, and that's really the key is like the people who have had success, it wasn't because of me. It was because of them. It was because of their effort that they wanted to put in. All yeah. I was able to do was to simply show them something maybe that they didn't know was here before. But they earned it. They went out and did the work. And there's been no one who's had success at Solar States who didn't do it themselves. And that's a key thing that I try to tell everyone is like, you know, we're going to try our best to support you. And we have, you know, resources in place that are different from other companies. But at the end of the day, if you're not working your butt off to get this, it's just not going to work. Yeah. And so that's, you know, that's part of the thing that I also learned along the way is I thought like early on, you know, I'm going to save people. I'm going to do that. And it doesn't work like that. Mm-hmm. It doesn't at all work like that. And I think people have different realizations at different times. And sometimes you hit them at the right point in time. And sometimes you don't. And sometimes like I gave an example with Youth Build earlier, you know, we transitioned away from Youth Build because it was hard to find younger people at 18 to 20 who were ready to work in this field. And what we've realized with our training programs is when we're training folks who are that young, really what the goal is exposure. It's letting them know this industry is here, letting them know it can be cool. Maybe they're going to go out and work three or four other jobs, become dissatisfied with the results of that, and have that light bulb moment of saying, oh yeah, that's right. I did this solar training. That was kind of fun. And maybe I want to go back to that now. And that's the goal now with younger folks, whereas people, you know, perhaps 23 to 30 who are taking our training programs, we're really looking for them to enter the workforce right away. You know, does that mean zero young people enter the workforce? No. Some people are just outstanding and they can do that jump. But for the most part, and this is me included, by the way, I mean, I'm not casting aspersions to anyone, but like when I think of myself at 18 to 20, I don't know about you, Joel or Jay, but man, I was a delinquent, man. There was no way I was getting up at 6:30 a.m. Every single day to do construction. I'll tell you that much.
Happened
until
I was 27. I don't I'm not 20. You know, expand that. It's a good minute. Yeah.
This has been amazing, Micah. Thank you so much for sharing the story with us, stories, you know, sharing your journey with Solar States. You know, it really resonates when you're saying about, you know, how people as individuals kind of make their own choices to decide to commit. You facilitated, you know, you created this opportunity, but with anything else, you know, people have to decide to step into those opportunities. It's amazing work you've been doing. And I'm so glad we've been able to have this conversation. Is there anything you want to add?
No, I mean, I also want to thank, you know, you and Joel, you guys at Community Energy really laid the groundwork for solar as being known as a thing. Community Energy was really early on to the game, and shout out to Brent Aldifer and all the wonderful folks who did that. So, you know, you guys have done great work over the years, and I can't wait to see what you do next.
Thank you for joining us on Re-Energize.
If you like what you hear, if you feel your energy rising, please pass this on to your friends.
And hey, you might have a story to share. If that's the case, you can reach out to us using our email address found in our show notes.
Joel, anything else before we drop?
I don't know. I'm just wondering if there's like a wrap it in the bow sentence or two, Micah. Parting words. This is your chance to send us off.
You know, solar has had a lot of momentum, and we need to focus on the fact that it is a job creator here. Environmentalism is about jobs, and it's about the dignity of work. And if we focus on that and we stay on the grind there, we're going to be just fine.